Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, Marquise Munson here with you today. We are in the process of trying to connect with David Schoenfeld, senior writer for ESPN.com. We're going to talk a little baseball with him. One of the things that he has been doing is voting for college baseball's all-time team, which is pretty interesting when you look at some of the guys that he features in there. But we'll talk to him about a number of things. Keep your fingers crossed. We're still trying to hook up with him. One thing that came up on Jason Stark's podcast that I was talking about. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I really enjoy his. Of course, for years and years, Jason was a weekly guest of Darren and I's. I'm going to say for probably 10 to 12 consecutive years, maybe more than that, way back in like 2002, spanning three stations. So we go way back. So I enjoy listening to his podcast that he puts together. It's called Starkville. Not to be confused with Starkville, Mississippi. But one of the things they brought up in this return to play, and I hadn't really thought about it, is... Oh, in fact, so let's hold this thought, because David is on here with us. Wasn't sure if we were going to be able to hook up with him, but we've got him now. So David Schoenfeld, is with us on 102.5 The Game. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for the invite. Appreciate it.
Well, let me start with something you just wrote about. You just like a lot of people these days, we're getting creative on some of the things to get people excited about, discussing about. Of course, college baseball is huge here in Nashville with the emergence in the last 10, 15 years of Vanderbilt's program. You put together your all-time college team. And so how much fun was that for you?
A lot of research, you know. I grew up in the 80s, which is when college baseball first kind of really became a big deal. ESPN started televising the College World Series. So, yeah, it was fun to kind of have a walk through memory lane, so to speak.
Yeah, and, of course, I remember that well, too. That was the first time I really learned much about college baseball. I used to watch the College World Series every summer on ESPN in the 80s and some of those great players that went on. But you had way more two-way players back then than you do now. You still have a few scattered here and there, but you point out some of the stats that people had were pretty amazing. You pointed out John Olerud, who everybody remembers as a great first baseman for a long time in the big leagues, but he was not only a great hitter in college, but an amazing pitcher. And there's others like that too. Dave Winfield, you look at some of the stats that he had in college as a hitter and a pitcher. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Dave Winfield. In fact, I think this still holds true. He was the only player who was drafted by MLB, NFL, and NBA. He didn't play football in college, but he did play basketball at the University of Minnesota. But yeah, plus he was a two-way player and led the Golden Gophers to the College World Series back, whatever year that was, 72 or 73. Yeah, I mean, certainly one of the all-time great athletes. You never hear him mentioned, like, right? You hear Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders, but Winfield, he could do it all. John Olerud, I'm from Seattle. I actually saw him play in high school. But, yeah, his sophomore year, probably the greatest year a college baseball player has ever had. He was 15-0, 2-point-something ERA, and what did he hit, .464? I know that was back in the era when – you know, the aluminum bats were especially rocket-like, but, you know, he went straight to the majors, never even played in the minors. So he was one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. So have you allowed yourself, David, to get excited about a return to play yet? Are you still kind of holding your breath a little bit that they can get all of these details worked out?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit, like most of us, you know, who are baseball fans, as much as we love the sport, sure, we want to see it in some form, even with empty ballparks and the like. But Yeah, there's still a lot of things here. You know, we're seeing some players opt out and elect not to play this season, and that's absolutely reasonable and understandable. I assume we'll see a few more. But, yeah, the biggest concern is once these players start congregating and getting their summer spring training going, and they're hanging out together, are we going to see the rates of the, you know, positive tests for the virus spike up? We don't know. They're going to be tested. Their temperatures are going to be taken. They're going to try to social distance. Most teams will have two different workout facilities, their regular MLB stadium and maybe some kind of college place nearby, you know, so that'll help create more social distancing. But, yeah, that's the unknown. What's going to happen when these guys all get together?
Well, one thing that dawns on me is baseball is such a game of habits, right? Your routine, the idiosyncrasies that we always love to follow about our favorite players, you know, the batting stance and what they do between pitches every time, like clockwork. And some of those habits, right, are going to be compromised here just because of we're going to have to relearn some things. It's going to be pretty inconvenient for some.
Yeah, no doubt. Anybody who's watched some of these games from Korea on ESPN where they've had, you know, they try to keep players out of the dugout. So that's supposedly one of the protocols. If you're not in the game, you're sitting in the stand. So that'll be weird. But, yeah, the big one for baseball players, no spitting.
Yeah.
You know.
In fact, we just had an interview yesterday, David, with Kurt Casale, a catcher for the Reds who lives here. And that was what he brought it up on his own. He said, that's the one thing I do it after almost every pitch, and I'm going to have to train myself to do otherwise.
Well, and anybody who's like been in a big league dugout after a game and you see the whole floor littered with sunflower seeds, so I assume those will be outlawed, right? Because you got to spit a sunflower seed. So we joke, but yeah, baseball players are absolutely creatures of habit. You know, from the time they step into the park 4 hours before game time, a lot of these guys follow the same routine. They're not going to be able to do that, you know, so that'll be interesting to see how they do adapt to that.
Talking to David Schoenfield from ESPN, senior writer, talking a little baseball. David, thinking about the 60-game season, you've got everybody tied for first, basically, on July 23rd. It's going to create something different than we've ever seen before. I know we're all sad that, you know, we're not going to see more games, but what could be the upside of this? I mean, you might, there's just not going to be a whole lot of separation, you would think, after 1 month, and so we could see a very exciting stretch run here.
Yeah, I think that's the positive way to look at it, is it is going to be fun. You know, if this was a regular season and every team's tied for first place on late July, we'd be like, oh, this is kind of cool, right? So, yeah, it is going to be a mad scramble. I think the teams that are bad, the Orioles and the Tigers and the Marlins, they're not really, they probably don't have a shot, but almost everybody else does. So it's going to be fun because we're going to see a couple surprising teams, just a law of averages. There's going to be some team that starts off 15-5 and stays in the race. So that's going to be fun. Every game, it's going to matter more, you know. So it'll be some interesting strategic decisions there, especially with how managers handle their bullpens. So if we do get the season underway and we actually do play baseball, I'm going to at least enjoy that mad scramble to get to the playoffs.
We're talking to David Schoenfield, senior writer of ESPN at ESPN. I should say, I read your piece on top 60 storylines for a 60-game MLB season, and obviously one that we will pay attention to here is Mookie Betts being in a Dodgers uniform, leaving the Red Sox. Now, who knows how long he's actually going to be there once he signs his big deal, but how big of a boost does an already talented Dodgers team get now that they have Mookie Betts? Obviously, they're the favorites to go for it in 60 games.
Yeah, no doubt. They were probably already the best team without Mookie. Now you add one of the top five players in baseball to your lineup, makes your defense better. You know, I know the Las Vegas odds, they're the favorite with, I believe, the Yankees are number two. That makes sense. Both rosters are pretty loaded. So whether he stays there long term, I would say the economic fallout from this probably makes it more likely that he returns to the Dodgers, because I think there's going to be some teams that aren't going to be in on the bidding on him over the winter because they're going to want to save money after losing money this year. But I'll tell you what, after seeing him in spring training, he looks like he was born to wear that Dodgers uniform, right? I mean, it's already a classic uniform. You add Mookie Betts in that uniform. I could see him staying with the Dodgers on a long-term deal.
You know, one thing that I've been thinking about and we've talked about too is there was so much heat in spring training on the Astros, and rightfully so.
Yep.
They brought it on themselves. But now I think there's a lot of heat on baseball as a whole just because of how these negotiations went to try and get back. So once they start playing the games, how much of that heat do you think returns for the Astros?
Yeah, that was right. The number one storyline, I think, you know, in a normal season, how do the Astros respond? How do the fans respond? And more importantly, how do opposing pitchers respond? There's not going to be fans, at least in most parks. But how will pitchers respond? Are they going to just, okay, let's just get through this season. In fact, one of the new bylaws is no brawling, although I don't know how you enforce that. If your emotions go, they
go,
right? Yeah. Good luck with that one. I don't know. I still think we're going to see some high and tight pitches to some of those Houston batters.
The team that I've followed since I was a kid, the Atlanta Braves, I think a lot of people put them in that next tier category. You have the favorites, and then you have those teams that people are going to be watching. But how would you view the Braves, Ronald Acuna Jr., their young stud that's coming back? But how would you look at them as they start a 60-game season?
Yeah, no, they're really good. In fact, I was just looking at their roster. A lot of depth, a lot of versatility in the lineup. I mean, Acuna, you know, he obviously has the ability to take his game to another level. You have an MVP candidate in Freddie Freeman. A lot of options for the rotation. So I was down at spring training right before everything got canceled. Saw Felix Hernandez pitch. I wouldn't count on a comeback, but he was having a really good spring. He could be their number five starter. Plus, they got all those other arms. So, yeah, I think they're... Look, the Nationals are really good, but losing Anthony Rendon is a huge blow. So I think the Braves, I would put them number one to win that division with the Nationals just a hair behind them.
But don't you think with some of the older pitchers that are on some of these teams that this shorter season benefits them? Because how many times do you see an older pitcher that they just they lose it by the time they get to June? Well, now you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I think it's actually it's an advantage for the Nationals. Not that like a Steven Strasburg is old, but he threw a lot of innings last year. We saw the Red Sox starters really struggle at the outset of 2019 after pitching a lot of innings in October. So, you know, the time off is a big boost for Strasburg and Max Scherzer. Scherzer, you know, ended last year with some health problems. So, in the Nationals case, they benefit, I think, more than any team from the layoff. Now they can just go all out and not worry about the innings on those starters.
As we let you go, David, one thing that I was listening to in Jason Stark's podcast was, should you be able to trade players? I mean, under the circumstances here, it's going to be very difficult to get through the season. We know the teams... you know, they're going to have to make some sacrifices here. I guess they're not in a bubble like presumably the NBA and NHL guys will be, where they're literally separated from their families. But I cannot imagine being traded during these circumstances. That would be tough. But I guess I don't know if there's a way around it. You have to, you know, you're trying to keep as much in place as you can. But what about that?
You know, that's a really good point. You know, I had thought about that from a baseball perspective, but you're right. But from a family perspective, it's hard enough what the players are going to have to be going through, those that are married and have children and whatnot. But, yeah, now thrown into the mix, you're 1 month with this team, and now August 18th, they're traded somewhere else. You got to find somewhere to live. What do you do with your family? You know, aside from all the other logistical issues baseball players have to deal with. Yeah, that's a good point. Unfortunately, their trades are not outlawed. There is a trade deadline, so we will see some trades during the season.
Well, let's just hope we get to that point where we can discuss it.
That
would mean we're progressing.
That means there's baseball.
David, thanks a lot for spending.
All right, guys.
Thanks for spending some time with us, and carry on, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You too. Take care.
All right, David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN, a senior writer. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more. We're going to bring up that trade question again and just sort of ask the question, how would you do this? Is this right? And could you have a two-month season not allowed to make a trade? What would that be like? Stay tuned. We're coming back.
I don't think I've ever heard this. Instrumental to Night Fever? Is that what we got here, Marquise?
Well, that's the Bee Gees version of Night Fever.
But it's the...
Yeah, but this is like a long... This is like a long instrumental. This is like a 12-inch...
It's like the intro, right?
It's like 12 minutes. Yeah, it's a 12-minute song. We can let it play for the whole segment. Like, just under you guys while you talk.
Send me that. I love that song, but it's like... That's like a way longer
Night
intro.
Fever,
I'm liking
Night
it, though.
Fever. Yeah,
well, don't
good.
Sing it, Chase, because that's only going to... I won't sing it either. We can't hit the falsetto.
We can't.
No, it's that Barry Gibb can, but... Marquis, send me that. Send that my way, man. I don't know how you do that, but I got to hear that. I want to hear that in its entirety. We don't have time on this show, and you know, maybe for the Bee Gees fan club that's listening, someday we'll let the whole thing play. But back to the question at hand here, we were kind of kicking around. You know, I know that when you play major league sports, being traded is part of it, but in a 2-month season. Is it worth considering not having trades under the circumstances here? What are your thoughts on that, Chase?
It's because you raised this question, and it really got me thinking, especially with baseball. Because with the other sports, you don't have to worry about it because they're past that. Now you're looking at more of the postseason. But as you're going to play the full regular season with baseball, I understand. And I understand the concern and how if you're a player and you don't have any type of trade protection, you're just going, please, please don't let me get traded because of all the unknowns with this. But from the game standpoint, I don't think you have a choice. You have to have that available. That is a part of it. That is a part of the game of being able to move players around. So you may not see it as much. You may not see as many trades as we usually see throughout a major league baseball season, but I think they're going to happen, and it's going to stink for those players that have to deal with it. But I just think it's a part of the strategy. I mean, you're going to, because especially now more than ever, we're going to find out by probably 20 games into this, you know, which teams are legit and which teams aren't. And that's when you're going to start seeing some movement, or are there some teams that are going to be, no pun intended, on the bubble of trying to, you know, make the playoffs, and they're going to want to make moves. So that's a tool that GMs use to help improve their teams as they go along, and I don't think you can take that away. I just think it has to be a part of it.
I don't think they will, but what if, for example, you want to make a trade? There's a health element to it as well, right? Like if you're traded to a place where you're supposed to be quarantined for a certain amount of time, like is there going to be an availability question for that player depending on where that person is traded? I can see something coming up with that, right? I mean, you want that player to be, he's got to be tested. Presumably he will have tested negative all throughout. There's just a lot of possibilities here. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I just feel for
players
trying to get through this, because you know, obviously hockey and basketball aren't going to be dealing with this. They're well past the trade deadline in their season, so it's not on the table for those two sports. This is just an added dimension for baseball as they try to get through their entire season in 2 months. But there's so many different layers to the 2 month part of this, like the 60 games, as you said. The trading deadline is 1 month in, so that's roughly, let's just say it's 30 games. The trade deadline is July 31st. Well, how much separation will there be in 30 games? You know, you're not going to have your traditional haves and have-nots right? Because I think there's going to be a big logjam in the standings in a lot of cases, or you're going to have a team that knows they're better than their record, right? Let's say their record after 30 games is, let's just say it's, I'm trying to do some math here, 15-15, right? Or even 14-16. You're under 500, but you know that you're capable of winning 20 out of 30, right down the stretch. You're not going to be a seller, probably. So I don't even know how much trading we'll see based on that. But you never know. There's also some teams that are probably thinking, you know what? It's going to be a crazy offseason. There's going to be a lot of free agents available. And maybe the wheels are turning. We're not going to re-sign this guy. What if I could get somebody for him right now? I'm not going to keep him anyway. And who cares if we don't win? There's just a lot of different things that could be going through a general manager's mind with that, which also brings up the question, will they still consider expanding the postseason field, which was talked about a long time? Because they never got to an agreement, so they haven't addressed it. But there is some speculation that maybe they would expand the playoff field to 16 teams for this year, just to get more teams involved in the postseason.
It's possible, and I, you know, again, that's one of those, you're just kind of, you don't really, there's not really a right answer to it, but I think that that's, as we were talking about this morning, Marquise and I were, I mean, this is where these leagues are going to have to just kind of change as they go, or adapt and evolve as they go, because they don't have all the answers right now, and you're not going to have all the answers right now. You're going to have to get everybody together so they all report tomorrow. And then by the time they actually start playing games, I think you're going to see some things that may have been agreed upon. And I hope that there were conversations of, okay, well, we can change these policies, you know, if we need to. But, you know, they may have to adapt. They may have to go, well, you know, maybe it makes sense to add more teams and do an expanded playoff. But then you don't want to see a situation where they get back into some sort of negotiation and have to delay things again, because we saw how well that worked last time. So that would be my only concern about that.
I'm going to bring up one more thing for you, and then when we come back, we'll hear a little bit of Jeff Passan last night on Scott Van Pelt, some of the issues that he's got brewing. He's always got issues that he compiles from his various sources. But you mentioned the depth, right? What usually separates the favorites, like the Yankees and the Dodgers, for example? They have oodles of depth. They got a lot of players that can help. Last year, the Yankees were a great story. I mean, as much as I don't like them, they had a ton of injuries, but they still soldiered on because they had great depth. They made it through, and they had guys that, honestly, I didn't know much about. You know, Jack Voigt, you know, and just come, you know, some guys that were not huge household names or high-paid, overpaid guys that gave great, great contributions. But the depth in a 60-game season, I could probably tell you, might help, because you got a lot of avenues where you can get production in 60 games. But I could also argue that the teams that aren't as deep might be an equalizer, right? If those players can put it together for 60 games and stay healthy. So I don't know the depth helps as much. I would think the more depth that you have, that's going to play itself out way more over 162 games as opposed to 60.
Yeah, I think where the depth helps you is if you have players like we're seeing right now back out because of health concerns, or there's some positive tests. Because as you mentioned with David, you know, they're not playing in the bubble. They're going to play in their home stadium. So the risk of exposure is higher with baseball and with these players than it is with other sports, and what they're, you know, what they're going to be doing with the bubble. So I think that's where the depth can really help you out. Like for instance, you know, the Braves have Duvall, and there are questions, you know, will Duvall make the roster, or is he going to be a depth player that is just on the bench and they're platooning, or does he start in AAA? You know, but that's a piece that, you know, could he could slide in if one of them tests positive or backs out or gets hurt or what have you. But no, I see what you're saying though. I think for the most part in 60 games, and it's like I brought up with David, that these older pitchers that usually flame out, you know, by the time you get to June and you're midway through the season, you're not going to have to worry about that because they're rested. I mean, Cole Hamels, somebody the Braves signed, you know, was hurt. Now hopefully he'll be good to go. And you'll be able to get sick, you know, a full 60-game season out of those guys, and so you don't have to rely as much on some of the younger pitchers that maybe aren't ready. So I think that that's definitely something that you got to look into and consider.
Yeah, I'm also thinking, you know, if you have a dominant deep bullpen, which can be very hard to know at the beginning of a season, right? You can go back through seasons where coming into a year, you might say, well, this bullpen is going to be awesome. They've got this guy, this guy, this guy. And then for whatever reason, one guy gets hurt. Another guy just isn't as effective as he was the year before. People figure him out. And that bullpen suddenly isn't as good as you thought. But on the other hand, there's some bullpens that emerge for a year that everything falls right. You just have that guy that gets in a groove, and he is money for the seventh inning every year. Or every time out there, there's going to be some bullpens that come out. And it may be ones that you would expect, and it may be some that you don't expect. But I think the teams that end up getting great relief pitching, they could dominate for 2 months, right? But that might be the hardest thing to know. Like the Mets had a disastrous bullpen last year. It cost them the wild card, really, when you get down to it. This year, they don't have Noah Syndergaard, for example. But they add Dellin Betances, who, when he's at his best, is a dominant reliever. Edwin Diaz, if he were to bounce back from a nightmare year last year where he gave up 15 home runs in the ninth inning, imagine that, 15 ninth inning home runs giving up. If he is back close to the pitcher he was before, then all of a sudden you could have an excellent bullpen for the Mets, and maybe you can overcome not having Noah Syndergaard, at least for 60 days. Right, and then there's going to be some out of nowhere pitchers that, you know, for 10 or 12 starts are at their very, very best. And if they were to have 30 starts, the cream would rise to the top probably, right? They wouldn't be able to sustain what they're going to do. But somewhere in here, there's going to be you mentioned Cole Hamels, who at this stage of his career, maybe you wouldn't expect him to be what he once was, where he could win 18 or 20 games and a guy you could really lean on for 200 innings, et cetera. But maybe he's got 10 or 12 great starts in him, right? There's going to be a few of those stories for sure. And it's going to be very, very difficult to predict.
Yeah, and I think that's the fun of it. I think that's going to be the fun part of this season is there are those storylines that you think you have the answers, but then at the end of the day, you know they may shock you just because we've never seen this before. So I like that. That's where baseball has an opportunity to draw people back in that they might have turned away because they couldn't get a deal done.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll hear a little bit from Jeff Passan last night about some of the issues that have come up in the Major League Baseball forum as players gather at the sites to begin the summer training, the countdown to July 23rd opening day. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll turn our attention to football at high noon. Dan Graziano from ESPN is going to join us, and we'll go down that avenue. Then we'll hit basketball at 1 o'clock. Some interesting stories from the NBA, and of course, everybody fighting through, just trying to get everybody there and symptom-free, virus-free. There are some positive tests, as you knew there would be. And we got to keep fighting through that on all fronts here, whether you're talking about your favorite team or just your own neighborhood, for that matter. But we continue our discussion for Major League Baseball as they hit their challenges. Jeff Passan, who's been on the beat throughout this whole process, the labor issues, et cetera, but
he's
now
a
the
superstar.
Gathering of players. Man, he has really emerged. I read his book called The Arm, by the way, and it's a fascinating book, especially if you've got kids that play and you want to study the arm. You'll also pull your hair out if you have any left, because there really are no perfect answers on how to protect your arm, but
Right.
He really gets into the history of why people hurt their arms, how it happens, stuff to avoid, but also theories as to where it's going. That's the first time I ever heard of Jeff Passan, but now he's a great day-to-day reporter. Here's what he had to say last night about the stories yesterday that started coming out on a handful of players that have opted out of coming back to play.
That's a realistic concern, but I think that the biggest concern, Scott, is when bigger names start opting out. And at this point, you know, there have been rumors, this player, his wife is pregnant, maybe he's going to want to opt out. That player, he's been around, he's got his service time, he's got his money. Why would he want to come and play? I think when it's all said and done, though, there isn't going to be a huge stream of players who do end up opting out. You may have a guy or two per team maximum, and I think it's going to come down to the individual decisions. But in the end, you have to answer to your teammates.
That's a good point. And there were a couple of names yesterday, but I don't think at the end of the season, if they get through the season, I don't think there'll be people saying, well, you know, they won, but so-and-so players weren't in the league. I don't think that's going to be part of the story. There'll be plenty of stories as to what was different in 2020. But for example, Chase, in 1944, 43, right in the middle of World War II, they continued to play baseball. But there were a huge number of top-level players that were in military service, right? Which is an interesting thing to think. Today, would that, you know, that doesn't, it hasn't happened. Of course, there hasn't been World War III, but that's just something, what a phenomenon. You had the best players in the game, like Ted Williams and those guys not playing. And you think about what they did, what that did to their career stats. But those years are looked upon a little bit differently. If you were the MVP or the World Series champion in 1944, when so much of a cross-section of the league wasn't playing, then that is looked upon a little bit differently. I don't think we're going to get to that point, at least based on what Jeff Passan is saying, although these guys that did it yesterday, they probably won't be the last players that check out.
No, not at all. And I totally get it. And, you know, he said you'll have to answer to your teammates or talk to your teammates about it. My thing is, if Ian Desmond, for instance, and he had a long explanation on his Instagram account of why he came to this conclusion and why he decided that it's not best for him to play, it at the end of the day, if you're doing it for those reasons, if you're doing it because you know your wife's pregnant or you know you have a young kid that has something or is susceptible, I really don't think that your teammate's going to look at you and go, dude, what are you doing? Like, really? You're picking your family over winning a World Series? I don't think you're going to have to worry about that. Now, one example that I'll use of where you might get pushback is if you're, you know, a younger player and you have a clean bill of health, and but you look at your contract and you're not making that much. Now you're going to lose it. No, you're not going to make anything if you opt out, but you know, that's where you might get some pushback on something. But I think at the end of the day, if you're doing what's best for you and your family, I don't really think you can fault a guy for doing that. I mean, that's you're seeing that across the board, and I think that's okay.
If you've searched your heart and you've really talked through this, and your heart isn't in it, then you're not doing your team a service. You're doing your team a disservice if you're playing, right? If you're out on the field and you're thinking, I shouldn't be here, then you shouldn't be there, right? Your team probably wouldn't want you there if that's the case. Now, that might happen to some players who feel obligated to be there, but maybe deep down they're thinking, yeah, I don't know if we should be doing this, or I'm worried about this factor in my life that's going on because of the pandemic. That could happen in some circles, but we'll see. I think the speculation is that they'll have plenty of players willing to play, and as long as you don't have a huge cross section of the best players, like the World War II example, that aren't playing, then I don't think you'll lose viewership interest because of that. Now, if that did happen, then I do think that would be a big issue for sure. If you had, you know, let's say a group of all-stars in the prime of their career elect not to play. If it's guys towards the end of their career, guys in special circumstances, then that's totally understandable.
Right.
And, so let's...
And, yeah. And no, I was just going to say, no, I agree with you. And that's what... Everything has to be on the table, too. And as we were talking about with all of this... You know, I'll quote a wrestler, but just when you think you have all the answers, I change the questions, and that's what's happened. I mean, we think, all right, we got this figured out. We have the answers here. We know what this is going to look like, and then something that we didn't know happens, and that changes the question. And so that's what a lot of these players are trying to take into account. You know, the NBA, they have to submit rosters by tomorrow. Well, who's to say that those rosters are going to hold up? And what I mean by that is that a guy tests positive or a guy changes his mind about, you know, because more information comes out. I think you have to be willing to have those conversations and to change your mindset because of new information. And that's where these teams are going to have to figure that out, so to speak, as they go.
I'm going to make an unprofessional on-air comment because we're in three different places. Marquise, do we need to take a short break and come back with more from passing, or are we taking it to the top here?
Well, you can just take it to the top, man. We might as well.
Let's take it to the top. All right, so let's move on. There's another thing or two I want to get into what Jeff Passan said last night to Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter. Here's a question, and the NHL has tackled this as well. Players from outside of the continent, pretty much, outside of the United States, coming back in from their homeland to get ready to play and what that process is like. Of course, baseball's got that same issue as well. Here's what he had to say about it.
Yeah, there are huge logistical challenges, whether it's guys from the Dominican Republic, whether it's people coming back from South Korea, you know, people who weren't able to go to Venezuela and had to find another country or stay down in Florida or stay out in Arizona. People are coming in from around the world, Scott, and a lot of these people are not allowed to get onto commercial flights and go into the country, whether it's because of travel restrictions or otherwise. So now you've got these charter flights that are being arranged by teams or, in some cases, by players to bring their teammates back in. But you don't know where any of these guys have been. You don't know what they've been doing. You don't know what their health is. And you're not going to be giving them COVID tests before they're getting on these flights.
So there's one avenue, and you know we've played a clip a few times with Dan Hamhuis of the Predators talking about that process as well. You know, for him coming from Canada, you have players coming from Sweden. Every country has different settings, right, on how they've tried to combat what's going on with the virus, and so that's a bit of a wild card. And you heard a lot of factors that apply to all sports in that answer from Jeff Passan. You have a varying degree of training levels and what facilities everybody had access to. So this is going to be a great challenge, but this will be part of the fun, I think, hopefully. And, you know, the health part of it aside, just trying to get everybody together, chemistry-wise, on the same page. I know for the NHL, they wanted the guys – I think Dan Hamhuis talked about his visa expired on – or expires on June the 30th, so you got to get back into the country before that work visa expires, so you can deal with that and extend it, so you can go on and play and so forth. So I don't
is
know
that
how
because
that works.
His contract
in baseball.
Is that because his contract ended like today? Is when like his, Dan Hamhuis?
Yeah, the league year would normally end on the last day of June. Right,
gotcha.
The new league year starts July 1st. Free agency would start July 1st. So they had to make all of these contingency plans for that. And, you know, I think that's why they told – I remember Elliot Friedman was telling us weeks ago that people were saying, get here on June 29th or before just so we can deal with all that and not have any extra issues to try to get you literally back into the country because your work visa might expire. So I would imagine baseball is dealing with that as well, right? All of these logistical concerns. And Passan goes on, and let's go ahead and play this last clip from him about you know, bringing, you know, people coming from all around the world. You're concerned. I mean, it's the same virus all around the world, but you have other places where people could theoretically be bringing it in unknowingly.
The fear among those in baseball is that you've got people coming in from all around the world, or Florida or Arizona or Texas or California, who are going to be bringing infection with them. These are worst case scenarios. These are doomsday scenarios, but they're also somewhat realistic scenarios, and they're things that people in baseball are dealing with right now before players get to spring training and before that first set of intake tests that are going to be taking place and are going to really give baseball a picture of just how many people in the sport are infected now and have been infected in the past.
And I'm glad the way he said it, Chase, too, is interesting. Whether you're talking about somebody coming from Venezuela, South Korea, Dominican Republic, or in hockey's case, you know, Sweden or Finland or Russia or Czech Republic, whether you're coming from there or Texas or Florida or Arizona, where you've been hanging out, you know, you're just coming from different places. So I think we just have to prepare ourselves to see the next thing on the ticker saying 15 guys tested positive. I think it's going to be sort of routine, right, for each team to have a certain amount of cases. It's just inevitable. It's just, what do you do to make sure it doesn't spread to more right away, right? And just get through that wave and get everybody started back on the same page. It'll probably be something that you constantly have to deal with and live with. And then how that affects it, things competitively, that remains to be seen. But just getting started is the first thing. So, yeah. You got to build in time for that to happen.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, we've had conversations with Elliot or anyone else, how they're like, hey, let's make sure we're getting everybody back, and that's something that the teams are telling their players. So, you know, that goes back to what I said, and it was a little tongue in cheek, but it's kind of true. Just when you think you have all the answers, the questions change, and that is a big part of it, of the you know, players that went to other countries, whether it's, you know, continental North America or across seas, that there are different policies, there are different hoops that you have to jump through, so you got to buy yourself time. It's like when you're going to the airport, you got to buy time before you know, it's more than just going through security and getting on your flight nowadays. It's you have to add that cushion time. And so that's that. I'm sure that a lot of players have done that, but then I'm sure that there are some players that haven't, and that's going to be a factor. That's going to be something that teams are going to have to deal with of, well, you know, they've had a visa situation, so they've gotten held up, and so they're not going to be able to go to the bubble right away. And once they get there, they got to quarantine. So I can imagine it's going to be a headache for managers and the league, but it's just, this is something that we all have to deal with right now.
I feel for the people on each team whose job it is to handle all of those logistics, right?
Yeah.
So-and-so has tested positive for the virus. He feels fine, but we got to get him away from everybody. So where does he stay? Okay, we got this hotel set up over here. Like, for example, I don't know what those logistics are for those sports. But I did hear a story. I was talking to somebody who works at a college, and they were talking about they're preparing to have the students come back, and for positive tests, they're setting aside a certain amount of dorm rooms to go quarantine where you can continue to live, right? And you can still be on the campus. You can't go to class, but you would be able to go into this area and continue to go to school online, basically. I mean, I don't know how it's going to work. I don't think anybody knows for sure. It may not be perfect, but you're trying to set up things based on what could happen, right? That makes a lot of sense. I don't know what that would be like in the sports venue. In the bubble, for example, for the NBA or the NHL, I would imagine there's going to be a quarantine area, right?
Yeah.
Where you can heal up. You can for a couple weeks be away from everybody. Hopefully, your symptoms aren't bad anyway, but you can hang out there until you're cleared to come back and play, in theory.
The sick players' ward, is that what we're going to call it?
The sick bay? I don't know. Yeah, well, I don't know what you call it. I mean, extra ping pong tables or, you know, video games to play by yourself. I guess you can't play ping pong by yourself unless you half a table up against the wall. I guess you can hit it up against the wall, but I mean, you are going to have to prepare for that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that the league and the teams individually are having to look at of, okay, well, what happens? And then it's a, and you kind of asked this, but then it's a, okay, well, let's say the Predators and Oilers and Blackhawks each have one player that tests positive. Is the sick bay area for all teams, or do you still have to keep them all separated? Or, I mean,
I guess it depends on the number of players, but I would have to think they would all be separated and isolated. It may be in the same general area. I don't know, but I know that they have probably been tackling this for a long, long time. And what you hope is that it happens. I mean, we know it's going to happen, right? It's just too perfect to envision that you would go through the whole season and have no issues, but that it doesn't become the story where every day, okay, these two teams are playing, but here are the five guys for each team, or the five key players in the game that otherwise would be there that are having to sit out for 2 weeks. It could happen. It may happen to some degree, but hopefully it's minimized enough that because of the mitigation that's happening, that it doesn't just overwhelm the competition where you're saying, who's kidding who here? You got two AAA teams playing here. Where are the real guys?
Right.
Like, where are the Braves? These aren't the Braves. These are the, what were the names of the teams?
Gwinnett Stripers.
Yeah, but what was we had the name of the other 30 guys. What was the Braves one?
The
Tiger Woods for the other Tigers.
I'd have to look it back up.
I've already forgotten the Braves one.
So have I.
This is the replace Mets. These aren't the Mets. These are the replace Mets was the Mets one. You know, that could happen, right, in a worst-case scenario. Let's hope it doesn't get to that.
Right.
We'll turn our attention to football in the next hour. We'll talk about some of their issues going forward. Dan Graziano is going to join us from ESPN, and we'll kick around a whole lot of things NFL style. We'll go to the Pigskin. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.